Committee, and good afternoon, everyone. The order of events today will be a public hearing on redistricting. Then we're going to go to a work session on House Bill 3960. We hope to have Speaker Simmons in for House Bill 3983. Public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2123. Then we will entertain Senate Bill 194, House Bill 2087, and work session on House Bill 3686. With that said, we'll open our public hearing on redistricting. Every Wednesday, we will devote up to approximately 30 minutes for redistricting. I have one person signed up.
I think he wants to speak.
One person signed up for redistricting testimony today. That'll be Jesse Larkey from Columbia County. Would you come forward, please? And before you take your place, we will have Kara tell us about what we have on the record relating to redistricting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Just we have four letters at your space and 10 emails just to enter for the record.
Okay, thank you. All right, welcome. If you'd give your name for the record, please.
My name is Jesse Larkey.
Thank you. Go ahead and deliver your testimony, please.
I would just like to say to the members of the redistricting committee that I'm here to represent the people of the area of Chapman, which is just a small rural community just outside of Scappoose. We are 576 voters. In your handout that I got for you, Mr. Chairman, I included 76 signatures from residents that I was able to collect. Everybody that I talked to was very enthusiastic about moving to House District Number 1. Currently, Chapman falls into House District Number 2, and the deal with that is that we don't share any common interests with the concerns of anything that happens in the greater part of House District Number 2, which includes Clatsop and Tillamook counties. Our common interests lie with the city of Scappoose. We share a zip code with them. We share a school district. Our Land Use Planning Commission is common with the city of Scappoose. All of our local news comes from the newspapers that come out of the city of Scappoose. And by all rights, our representative at the legislature should be the same as the one as that of Scappoose. According to ORS 188.010, communities of common interest should not be divided, and there is no doubt that Scappoose and Chapman are a common interest community. We really are one community. Scappoose is the closest population center to us. And really, that's all I have to say. I just wanted you to try to have. Do you have any questions?
As we look at Scappoose, which direction do we go to find Chapman?
In the map that I put there is a little green area.
Ah, okay.
Just 8 miles west of Scappoose.
Right, very good. Thank you. Any questions? Right, thanks for your testimony today.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Anyone else like to offer up redistricting testimony today? Hold an opportunity. Okay. All right. We'll close the public hearing. District. And we now open a work session on House Bill 3960. And members, at your places, you will find some new amendments. I'd like you to take a moment to look those over, and then we will have the proponents of those amendments come up and talk to us about them. I would draw your attention to your dash four amendments, your dash five amendments. Take a look at your dash fours and dash fives. All At this point, I'll have Joe Gilliam come forward. Afternoon.
How are you?
Well, thank you. You'd state your name for the record and then explain the Dash 5 amendment to us, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. The Dash 5 amendments would do the following. They're a takeoff from the Dash 1 amendments. We've been working hard trying to find a compromise and to try to bridge this gap closer and closer. We've been back talking with retailers on what's functional, what's practical, some things that do work and don't work, and we've come up with this after our last discussion on this bill. In subsection 2, as you can read it there, what it would do is require payment from the retailer to the wholesaler. The payment must be delivered within 5 days after delivery of the beer or wine product. Representative Marks asked me last time, the Dash 1 amendments that we had here last time would allow initiation of the payment by 5 days and then arrival after that. This requires arrival of payment either by check or by EFT by the 5th day. So there is a dead set deadline that it has to be there. The EFT would be initiated by the retailer. A check or whatever would have to be delivered, either hand-delivered or mailed in time to be there by the 5th day. A postmark would not satisfy that requirement. It would have to be in their hands. Section 2 and Section 3, we're trying to find ways that would alleviate some of the pressure for the retailers and some of the float that we have to give out and not put a burden onto the distributors. And one of the issues that we've had is where the nickel goes for the deposit. The deposit on each can or each bottle was not contemplated in the Tide House laws. It's a separate financial transaction. But under current law, we currently have to pay that nickel at COD dock, which means we have another nickel we've given to distributors, which they go off and float at our expense.
Okay, if I might ask for a clarification, a lot of us may not know how that works, and so do I understand then when delivery is made, you pay the distributor for the, you pay the deposit on each bottle to the distributor at that point?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. If you will, I brought some props, but I know you've got a long committee here today. I can bring them up if you'd like, or I can just try to give you a quick explanation of how it happens.
Go ahead with the quick explanation.
Okay. If you will, if the retailer's here, your consumer's to my left, and your distributor's here, when that product comes into the store, we pay to them. Now, we hold that product and wait until we sell that product. At that point, the consumer gives us a nickel, we give them the product. Product comes back to the store, we take the cans, they get their nickel. We didn't take our cans, give them back to the distributor, we get our nickel back. So you actually have two nickels floating back and forth like this. What this amendment would do would be to eliminate this transaction here, because the distributor does not have to pass this nickel on to their manufacturer or to anybody else. They just hold this in a pot until they have to redeem it. And what ours would do is get rid of that nickel. The product would come into the store, customer would buy it, give us the nickel, customer would bring the can back, and this nickel would just go back and forth, money in, money out, between the retailer and the consumer. It doesn't change the travel of the can through the recycling system. It doesn't change anything to the consumer. It just eliminates this other process that's in between and allows us not to have to float that nickel per container.
Okay, and how does that work its way into this argument? Would you put that together for us?
Well, currently we have to, on the COD law, we have to pay for the product itself and also pay the nickel. And nickel is of no consequence to the transaction of buying beer or wine. It is not contemplated by the Tide House law, but it's yet another nickel per container that we have to pay a COD, mm-hmm. and it's our money out there working for someone else. Mm-hmm. When our transaction is between the consumer and the retailer where the nickel is exchanged.
Questions?
But sure, there's another benefit, and there are many different sizes of cans anymore, and they all end up in the same bag. And there's another issue that arises here that this does help with indirectly. We get paid just for the bag. You've seen the big plastic bags you throw all the cans in, and based on an average number. If you have a 12-ounce can or a 16-ounce can or the new pint can, or if you've seen them, the new keg of beer, they all go in the same bag. They're all a nickel. So how many cans in a bag? Depends if you have a full of 12-ounce cans or full of keg cans or a combination. And there's been ongoing litigation and disagreements over what is in that bag and what's a fair price for it. In the millions of dollars after several years as it goes down, this eliminates all that. You don't have to count cans. You don't have to track cans because the retailer and consumer are just money in, money out at that point.
Okay. Representative Gardner and Jeff Ross.
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. Just a couple. Mr. Gilliam, before preparing the Dash 5 amendments, have you sat down and talked to the distributors about the nickel redemption issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, no.
Well, Mr. Chair, then your first comments when you brought up the Dash 5 amendments was the Dash 5 amendments were an attempt to find some compromise. We wouldn't call that exactly trying to find compromise if one doesn't even talk to them before you have it drafted, would it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, I'm sorry if I misspoke. I was looking for compromise amongst the committee votes. The distributors have made it very clear that they have no intention of compromising on any of the issues other than the one issue of them withdrawing money from our accounts, which there's no agreement on. So outside of that, there's been no other offer other than, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'd just simply say that it's a little tough to say that they're unwilling to find compromise on an issue you already said you haven't even talked to them about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, last week I was presented with a proposal of an election violation against my PAC tied into this issue that was unfortunate and unfounded. It did not happen. But once you get to that point between two parties where you're threatening those kinds of actions in order to try to make somebody move, it pretty much shuts down conversation. And then you just try to work with the people who are talking to you on the committee and try to find something that everybody can that's reasonable, that can live with, and that we hope your discretion says, okay, here's a fair deal.
Just one comment, Mr. Chair, to you. I would hope before we consider adopting this kind of an issue that we'd certainly have a fuller hearing on it and a little bit of notification for bringing this in, kind of a large dramatic change to the issue. Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, I'm just kind of curious, what percentage of the cans don't ever come back to you? They're in the lake and hopefully not on the side of the road.
I went back, Representative Berger, I went back to the hearing last session, House Bill 3059, and Crink had provided a listing of the last 1990-1998, if you'd like a copy of this, because each year it's an average of 98%.
Come back.
Yes, through Crink. Now, Crink handles about 55% of all the cans in the state, but it's a pretty good, 55% is a pretty good sample.
Okay. Thank you.
Good questions, Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might actually be a question for the Crink representative, but what do you do with the cans when you get them back? I mean, how does Crink make their money if that 5% doesn't somehow flow to them? Somehow in my mind, I thought that somehow that nickel helps pay for the recycling of those cans. Is that obviously not correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, actually, there's no statutory redemption. I mean, administrative cost built in. The nickel passes, like I said, back and forth.
That's it.
And no fraction is ever taken out of that by the grocer or by Crink or the distributor for handling the cans. It's all been built in as mandated by the bottle bill into the cost of business. And so the only money available in there is any unredeemed can. The 98.6 of the 1.4% that's not redeemed, those nickels are sitting there, and that's really the only slack in the system.
Okay. Any further questions? All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Paul Romaine, please. Welcome, Mr. Romaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine, and I'm an attorney in Portland. I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. I'm constantly amazed by this bill. It's what am I going to have to respond to today? But fortunately, because it's been around forever, I've responded to all these issues, so I can do it. I'll pull talk A out of my hand. I didn't realize we were going to get into a bottle bill discussion today, but I'd be happy to fill you in on this stuff, but do you want me to comment upon the dash fours or the dash fives?
I'd like you to comment on both of them.
Okay.
I would ask you not to spend a tremendous amount of time on the bottle issue.
Thank you. The dash fours, Mr. Chair, you graciously put together, and they're basically a takeoff of the dash twos that Representative Starr put together. And what they do is, they are, in effect, our bottom line, if you would, from a distributor standpoint. When this issue was brought to you, it was brought to you as a matter of, we have a convenience problem in the back room. We need to solve our problem. How can we do that? And they were talking about EFT. So, again, you all know the history. We went back. We looked at this thing. The dash fours that Representative Starr was gracious enough to put together for us presented a next business day EFT initiation. What we've done in the interest of compromise is to say, all right, we'll go to the second business day for initiation of the EFT. That, in effect, we're talking pretty much the same thing when you get a check and you put it through the process, depending on where the clearinghouse is. The funds are going to arrive about the same amount of time. So we can, from a distributor standpoint, what we are proposing to you is the dash fours are fine with us, the dash twos are better for us, but we can live with the dash fours. Okay. Now, the dash fives, I'm actually, I don't even know what to respond on them. First of all, they go well beyond the EFT that everybody was talking about, and they basically amount to a reward for not paying by EFT. Electronic funds transfer. And second of all, the section three, which is the bottle bill section that I will not explain in detail, I can't really figure out, and I've been doing bottle bill stuff since time began. I think I may be in favor of the section three, because I think that they don't understand how the bottle bill works, and that we actually come out pretty well under Section 3. But I don't think it's what the grocers wanted, because the way I read this, the grocer initiates the deposit, keeps the deposit. Well, the Safeways and Freddy's and those folks over-redeem about 150%. Where are they going to get the money? Does it come out of their pocket? So right now, the only reason we initiate the deposit at the distributor level is we have a territory that we cover. So every bottle and can sold in that territory is ours, that particular distributor. And then when we redeem them, it's irrelevant where you bring it back to. So you can buy at the retailer that sells, you know, 100 cans and redeems only 10, and you can bring it back to the store that redeems 150 but sells only 100. And they're still going to get the nickel from that distributor, because it's the same distributor who's servicing them. I think that this basically really does a disservice to those stores who over-redeem. But I'm not sure. I can't really figure it out. So I'm adamantly opposed to it. I would like to say that to Representative Verger's comment about redemption, we believe that approximately 98% of the state of bottles are redeemed in the state. That's an impossible number. It's absolutely impossible, and it's because bottles and cans that say Oregon refund 5 cents or have a similar or the same UPC code, even if they don't say Oregon refund 5 cents, are sold in all your neighbor states. And you have to understand that an empty case of beer cans is worth $1.20. And it didn't take people very long to figure out you could bring it across border and actually get the money for it. And there's a sizable number that do come across border. So, but this is, we're talking about credit and electronic funds transfer, and now we've brought in the bottle bill. It seems a little bit out of place. What we would, in closing, what I'd like to say is, at some point this discussion really does need to end. And I understand and I appreciate your patience, everybody here on the committee, with this. We think, as distributors, we have gone a long way to trying to solve the problem that was enunciated. And we think the Dash 4s are an even further step. And what we would say is, please, if there is no agreement, we don't want to be battling this through minority reports. We don't want to be battling this in the Senate. If there's agreement to move forward with the Dash 4s, then so be it. Let's go forward, and that's the bill that goes through. But I don't want this thing going on and on and on with a battle at every single stop in the road. This thing has to end at some point, and we would appreciate this ending. Thank you.
Let me ask you, what do you intend to do when a retailer does not pay you within the 5 days?
Mr. Chair, it all depends on the retailer. Mr. Gilliam alluded to an election law violation, and I was not going to bring it up, but I will since it was brought up by Mr. Gilliam. That issue is still very much alive. Basically, the one who was extremely hurt and still is being hurt by the what we believe is an election law violation and a liquor control law violation wants the time to work it out with the grocer. And that's why nothing has been done. I've been out of town, as most of you know, in Washington, D.C., and I just got back. But that will be either resolved or something will be done about it. That's irrelevant to this, and it was brought up separately from this. It has nothing to do with this. But the problem is that what it did illustrate is what happens when you go and you complain or do something to a major grocer. They have the leverage. And they continue to have the leverage. Most of you have seen there is a slowdown, an outright removal of shelf of product from shelves going on right now against a major distributor in the state. And we are appalled by it. The problem is that if it's not something that we initiate, then we are going to be back in the position of having to complain, and that brings up a tremendous problem for us. So what we get back to is the Dash 4s we can live with, we will work with. We actually will try. I will tell you this. If you do not do anything, we will put the Dash 2s into rule form and try and move them through the Liquor Control Commission. They do have the authority to adopt them. We believe we can get them through. We think it's a good idea. And that's where we are going to go with this. We think EFT is something that needs to be available for the grocer to say yes or no to. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. O'Meara? Representative Garrard.
Paul, just want to make sure you're okay with this bill with the Dash 4s.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I am fine with the bill with the Dash 4 amendments that the chairman has prepared. We suggested those as a potential compromise, but only if our opponents also agree to those provisions, because what I don't want is a bill moving through the process where I'm fighting this thing every single turn, because we will take those Dash 4s, or basically the Dash 2s, and put them into rule form. We don't object. In fact, it's stronger if they're in statutory form, but that's where we feel. If we can come to some agreement with the grocers supporting this, then that's fine. Otherwise, we would say, let's be gone on to things that have more important consequences for everybody. Thank you
for the questions. All right, Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3960, and I'm going to recess the committee for a few moments. We will.